You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the globe to bring you the latest developments in medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. We love the earth. It's time for the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. Now, here's your host, Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Thursday, November 9th, 2017, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. And we've got an amazing show for you today, folks. Just about an hour ago, I wrapped up an exclusive interview with investigative journalist Angela Baca, who dug deep into what's happened in Ohio with regard to their attempts to legalize marijuana for all adults, as well as their medical marijuana program they've ended up with. But most excitedly for me, we got to talk about the funding for the Joker to my Batman, Kevin Sabet, Project Sam, and how they're really just a front. They're just the puppet that's really being controlled by the opiate industry. It's an amazing bunch of work she's done in the Huffington Post. We'll talk about that coming up in the middle of the show in our activist agenda. Also on the show today in What in the News, I'm so excited that the mainstream media, 2 weeks, 2.5, 3 weeks later, has caught on to a story that I first broke on the marijuana agenda, which is Congressman Earl Blumenauer, my congressman here in Portland, starting a political action committee to fight against the prohibitionists in Congress by putting up billboards and such. They're finally reporting on it. They did give me some proper respect and credited my reporting. Very happy about that. We'll tell you the response from Congressman Pete Sessions, no relation to Jeff Sessions, but they're similar ideologically, and the response from Kevin Sabet and Project Sam. That's coming up in What in the News. Also on the show today, we'll have time for a radical rant where I'll pontificate a bit on the conversation Angela and I had with regard to the opiate industry and the anti-marijuana industry. That'll be in our radical rant. But before we get to that, today is also a very special day for me personally and a lot of people out there, as it is Carl Sagan's birthday. And Carl Sagan was a devout follower of reason. He was a great scientist. He was also a pot smoker that he wrote about in his Mr. X essay. You can look that up on the internet. Here's something from Carl Sagan that has always moved me. It's his discussion of the Earth as the pale blue dot, and it refers to a photograph that was taken by the Voyager spacecraft as it was leaving our solar system. And it took, you know, a long time even just to download the photograph pixel by pixel. It took 5.5 hours per pixel to download the information. And it's a picture from the outskirts of our solar system, a picture of Earth. And the little pale blue dot that makes up just one pixel in this picture is what Carl Sagan is talking about in this epic speech.
Consider again that dot. That's here. That's home. That's us. On it, everyone you love, everyone you know, everyone you ever heard of, every human being who ever was, lived out their lives. The aggregate of our joy and suffering. Thousands of confident religions, ideologies, and economic doctrines. Every hunter and forager. Every hero and coward. Every creator and destroyer of civilization. Every king and peasant. Every young couple in love. Every mother and father. Hopeful child. Inventor and explorer. Every teacher of morals. Every corrupt politician. Every superstar. Every supreme leader. Every saint and sinner in the history of our species lived there, on a mote of dust, suspended in a sunbeam. The Earth is a very small stage in a vast cosmic arena. Think of the rivers of blood spilled by all those generals and emperors, so that in glory and triumph they could become the momentary masters of a fraction of a dot. Think of the endless cruelties visited by the inhabitants of one corner of this pixel on the scarcely distinguishable inhabitants of some other corner. How frequent their misunderstandings. How eager they are to kill one another. How fervent their hatreds. Our posturings, our imagined self-importance, the delusion that we have some privileged position in the universe, are challenged by this point of pale light. Our planet is a lonely speck in the great enveloping cosmic dark. In our obscurity, in all this vastness, there is no hint that help will come from elsewhere to save us from ourselves. The Earth is the only world known so far to harbor life. There is nowhere else, at least in the near future, to which our species could migrate. Visit? Yes. Settle? Not yet. Like it or not, for the moment, the Earth is where we make our stand. It has been said that astronomy is a humbling and character-building experience. There is perhaps no better demonstration of the folly of human conceits than this distant image of our tiny world. To me, it underscores our responsibility to deal more kindly with one another and to preserve and cherish the pale blue dot, the only home we've ever known.
This is your Cannabis Headline News, brought to you by MarijuanaMoment.net, the complete source for all your marijuana news in one morning newsletter from Marijuana Majority founder Tom Angel. Subscribe today for free at MarijuanaMoment.net.
This is your Cannabis Headline News for Thursday, November 9th, 2017. I'm Russ Belville. A U.S. Government Accountability Office report found that 40% of Border Patrol checkpoint seizures were for less than 1 ounce of marijuana from U.S. citizens. In contrast, seizures at other locations were more often higher quantities of marijuana seized from non-citizens. Over 14,000 checkpoint seizures for under an ounce and about 1,100 seizures for 50 to 250 pounds were made from 2013 to 2016 at checkpoints. A virtual mirror image of the figures for such seizures further than 1/2 mile away from a checkpoint. In total, from 2012 to 2016, there were over 71,000 seizures for marijuana at the southwest border. Seizures for all other drugs, firearms, ammunition, currency, and other property totaled just over 18,000, meaning that marijuana makes up almost 4 out of 5 seizures conducted by the Border Patrol. Vermont Republican Governor Phil Scott said he intends to follow through on his pledge to sign a marijuana legalization compromise bill, and the House Speaker said she expects to move such legislation early in 2018. When legislators finished up their session in June, the last bit of unfinished business on their agenda was H 511, a bill that would legalize adult possession of marijuana starting in July 2018, reports 7 Days Vermont. That bill will still be on the House calendar when legislators return to Montpelier in January, an immediate reminder that the long-debated issue has not gone away. Scott told 7 Days that if lawmakers adhere to a compromise reached in June, he fully intends to sign the bill next year. Based on Scott's concerns, lawmakers agreed to stiffen penalties for providing marijuana to youths and for driving with kids in the car while high on marijuana. The Portland Press-Herald reports that Maine is cracking down on how caregivers grow and distribute medical marijuana, allowing surprise inspections and implementing a plant-to-patient tracking system. The State Department of Health and Human Services issued new rules Wednesday that tighten Maine's fast-growing and changing medical marijuana program. The department didn't issue a statement on the rules, which take effect February 1. The rule prohibits a visiting patient from another state from cultivating marijuana for medical use, requires a medical provider's endorsement on any petition to add to the list of conditions that can be treated with marijuana, requires nursing facilities that assist a qualifying patient to have storage, use, and administration policies, and tightens up the definition of collectives, said DHHS spokeswoman Emily Spencer. She added that caregivers are prohibited from participating in a collective, but they can rent separate, self-contained, locked, and secure locations within a building where other caregivers grow. Caregivers may not help another caregiver in cultivation or processing medical marijuana, although cultivation materials used by the caregivers in a common building can be stored in common areas. Mainstream media is finally reporting on the formation of an anti-prohibitionist political action committee by Oregon Democratic Congressman Earl Blumenauer. The story, first covered by the Marijuana Agenda live in mid-October, explains how Blumenauer will be raising money to contribute to a billboard campaign against Texas Republican Congressman Pete Sessions, who, as chair of the House Rules Committee, blocked pro-marijuana legislation by Blumenauer. National prohibitionist group Project SAM has responded by funding billboards that show a mother with a baby praising Sessions for, quote, protecting my family against marijuana legalization, end quote. Project SAM head Kevin Sabet said, quote, the pot lobby can't stand having someone stand up to their addiction for profit tactics, end quote. Echoing that talking point was Sessions, who told the Salem Statesman Journal, quote, the merchants of addiction are attempting to influence our work, and it's my hope that we will see this problem as a national crisis, end quote. Once flying high, Denver-based MassRoots has nosedived, reports the Associated Press. At one point, MassRoots was flying high, raising millions of dollars from investors and attempting to become the first cannabis company listed on the NASDAQ. Over the course of 2017, the marijuana-centric Denver-based social media network has nosedived. Last month, the company's board of directors abruptly fired the CEO. A $12 million stock deal to acquire tech firm Cannaregs was scrapped. And its net loss for the first 6 months of the year skyrocketed fivefold from the period the year prior to hit $19.1 million. This has been your Cannabis Headline News for Thursday, November 9th, 2017. I'm Russ Belville.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Hi, I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. If you appreciate my full-time dedication to reporting and analyzing the news about cannabis, consider becoming a patron of the show. For just $4.20 per month, you'll help keep my live stream and podcast free while earning yourself your own private ad-free podcast link for the show, as well as links to the supporting articles and data. For a $9.99 VIP subscription, you'll get all that plus my exclusive research, data tables, and graphics. Just log on to mjagenda.com and click the Become a Patron button today.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Looking for the 420 friendliest way to visit beautiful legal potland, Oregon?
I'm Lori Duckworth, inviting you to come stay with us at Delta 9 House and Studios.
You get your own private room with queen bed and access to our high-speed Wi-Fi, premium entertainment system, and more.
We'll even cook you breakfast. Look us up on Facebook at Delta 9 House.
That's facebook.com/Delta9House.
Delta 9 House is booked through Airbnb.com, City of Portland, permit number 17-159855.
People say no to drugs.
It's really, really easy.
Adding more gasoline to the fire.
Lackadaisical.
Really tough, really big, really great.
To infect and rot our nation.
Dangerous gateway drugs.
We don't need to be legalizing marijuana.
To build and grow a stronger, healthier, and drug-free society.
In the news.
Today in What the News, I want to expand a bit on that story that's been talked about and shared now from the Salem Statesman Journal. Salem, of course, being the capital city in Oregon. I was contacted by the reporter, I forget his name, Jonathan something, but I was contacted by the reporter about this a couple days ago, who wanted access to the video I filmed, I live streamed on Facebook, Congressman Blumenauer's appearance at the National Cannabis Industries Association's Oregon Quarterly Cannabis Caucus. And it was there that Blumenauer spoke out about the need for Congressman for there to be a political action committee against Congressman Sessions that he announced there. And this was like, I think October 15th was when we had this. He announced there that there would be this committee to put up billboards in Sessions' district that would target him for blocking medical marijuana access. Basically, he blocked a vote that would have allowed for medical marijuana access by veterans. And so Bloomin' Arrow wants to make hay from that and point out that that was a pretty lousy thing for Sessions to do. And so we've got the video there. I wanted to be able to play this for everyone to get it from Blumenauer himself. So this is Congressman Blumenauer speaking out about 3 weeks ago at the Oregon Quarterly Cannabis Caucus.
Colorado is helping inform some of their decision. And I talked to him about, because part of what he was talking to us about was trans, it might be interesting for us to have a North American West Coast cannabis corridor for being able to trade in product, tourism. Sounds like fun to me, and he professed interest in moving forward. In terms of not being able to make this stuff up, a couple of the highlights of my week, the suggested nomination, Tom Marino, as the drug czar, which was coincident with the report on 60 Minutes, the big story in the Washington Post, where he spearheaded a change in federal statute that made it almost impossible for the DEA to crack down on pill mills. And did it hand in glove with the pharmaceutical industry. Behind the scenes, people didn't know what they were voting on, although it looks like the plug may be pulled on that. But the highlight for me was the governor of Kentucky, Bevin, you may have heard, saying he was absolutely opposed to any legalization of cannabis, medical cannabis, in his state because of the marijuana overdose deaths. To which I immediately tweeted, "Mission accomplished, Governor." As long as you've been in office, there have never been an overdose death in Kentucky.
Or anywhere.
From marijuana. No recorded deaths anywhere in America. And in fact, as I testified before the Congress Committee, when they were having a little perfunctory meet and greet on the opioid crisis, I gave them some of the information, and many of you have provided us with chapter and verse, where you actually have more access to medical marijuana, there are fewer pills prescribed. There's persuasive evidence that it is actually more effective dealing with chronic pain. And the longer the people have had access to it, the more effective it is. California, as you know, has had medical marijuana legalized longer than any other state, and their opioid overdose death rate is one-third less than the national average. The rest of the country is about 25% less, but the evidence is compelling. And I'm hopeful that we're going to be able to use this moment of the collusion with the drug industry, like we saw with the 60 Minutes, and efforts that they're concerned about your success, to be able to get the toehold that we need. The priorities in this Congress are very simple, and they haven't changed since we've been having our conversations over the course of the last 4 years, 5 years, in my case, 40 years. We want to make sure that we deal with the inequity of 280E, and if there is a tax bill moving, I've been in consultation with Ron Wyden, who is now totally on board with us and sponsoring legislation in the Senate. We think that there's a very good chance that we could attach that to a vehicle. We don't need standalone legislation, which is hard for anything, but tacking a small provision that is common sense, that's supported by Grover Norquist, you remember was at my first press conference on this, the Republican tax activist, that this is entirely within our capacity. Second, the notion that we're going to continue every avenue possible to be able to allow you to pay fair taxes with a check. And this is something, as I move around the country, I've never met a person who thinks it's a good idea to force you to go through the contortions to be in the absence of being able to have free access to banking. And we've got, again, standalone legislation there, but looking for any avenue that we have to be able to move that forward. Third, deals with research. We have bipartisan legislation. Actually, my Republican co-sponsor is a guy named Andy Harris, and if you watch some of the debates on the floor of the House, Andy doesn't believe in even medical marijuana, but he understands that we need to have research to be able to clarify so there isn't the ambiguity. And I thought with me and Andy as sort of the lead on that we might be able to punch that puppy through and be able to clarify the situation. And there are a whole host of things that will cascade out of that. Some of you were with me a couple weeks ago when we kicked off my cannabis fund. And I appreciate all of you who were supportive of that. We're going to, I spend a lot of time around the country trying, not just on the marijuana campaigns in the states that have them, but I've been working to try and get you a better Congress. And part of what I am doing as we work with candidates is to use resources to get them on board, to not just contribute to them, but teach them how to talk about cannabis. Help them identify what is the appropriate plank in their platform that deals with cannabis. Because I don't care where they are, who they are, what the district is, there is part of the agenda that you care about that they are able to support. And we're not going to support anybody who can't support you. One really fascinating woman I met this week, Deb Harlan, a Native American from Albuquerque, who is all over supporting legal cannabis. It's really exciting to see people like this who are starting to understand. One of the other things we are doing is not just helping friends, but to help people who are against us find something else to do with their time. The first target for me, and with your help, we're going to be doing some things to make his life interesting, is Pete Sessions. The person who denied, who was the point person for the Republican leadership, denying us the ability to have a clean, straight vote on Rohrabacher Blumenauer. Denied the opportunity to move forward with our veterans' access legislation that is broadly supported and actually passed both the House and the Senate last Congress until there was a backroom deal to strip it out of the appropriations bill. Well, some of you were a part of what we did to kind of push back on that. The chair of that conference committee, Mark Kirk from Illinois, not only led the charge in stripping it out, but had disparaging comments to say, not just about medical marijuana, but our veterans who need and depend upon it. Now, I'm not certain that the letters we wrote, the contributions we made, was determinative on why he is now ex-Senator Kirk. But it was an important statement to make. And we're going to be putting up some billboards in Pete Sessions' district. It's going to feature a veteran and ask the question why Pete Sessions doesn't want him to have access to his medicine. In Texas, there's a growing support for medical marijuana. In fact, we had some of those supporters up for our cannabis fund kickoff a couple weeks ago. We're going to make the point that there are consequences. This is not a free vote. People are going to take a position one way or another. And if they're going to be part of an effort to deny people access to medicine, that can be transformational. I mean, you know this. Some of the people I've met, the families, the veterans, what difference cannabis has made to their being able to have a normal life again is profound. Just profound. And this is going to be part of the political landscape this year. We have some other people whose attention we're going to get, and people we're going to help support, and make sure that this is woven into the broader context. Congressional, state and local. I'm glad to see Commissioner Chloe Udeo here, who's been deeply concerned, I know. We've had several conversations. About why the city of Portland needs to be the most difficult city in the state for cannabis businesses.
I don't agree with that.
You know that one of the reasons we had such a strong vote was voters in Portland. They care about this. And I'm working with people around the country who are trying to capitalize on both the benefits of providing consumers and patients, especially for what they want. And there's an unparalleled economic opportunity.
Earl Blumenauer speaking October 15th to the NCIA Oregon Quarterly Cannabis Caucus. When we come back, an anti-drug public service
announcement.
You're
listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
If you work in the cannabis industry, consume marijuana, or just support freedom, you need to know about breaking policy news that affects you. Marijuana Moment is the daily newsletter that helps you stay on top of all the latest and most important state, federal, and international cannabis developments. Brought to you by longtime legalization activist Tom Angel, Marijuana Moment puts a concise yet comprehensive overview of cannabis news in your inbox early every weekday morning. Wake up to Marijuana Moment and rest assured you'll be ready for the cannabis news that's driving the day. Subscribe now at marijuanamoment.net.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Hi, I'm Russ Belville. Join me as I cover the Marijuana Agenda at the Oregon Marijuana Business Conference the weekend of November 18th and 19th in beautiful Ashland, Oregon. The OMBC is Oregon's biggest and longest-running conference dedicated to the cannabis industry and marijuana activism. You'll hear an extended interview with influential state senator Floyd Prezansky, a VIP reception and keynote address from the legendary Henry Rollins, and a free after-party featuring music from Hieroglyphics and Souls of Mischief. Plus, you'll get information from 40 industry exhibitor booths and be able to question members of the Oregon Liquor Control Commission regarding cannabis issues they'll be ruling on. Visit OregonMBC.com to learn more and book your tickets now. That's OregonMBC.com for the Oregon Marijuana Business Conference. We'll see you there. Now, in the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Marijuana Agenda presents this anti-drug public service announcement.
Look, check it out. We about to go get twisted. Y'all coming or what?
Nah, man, I gotta hit the books, man.
All right, well.
All right.
Make it happen.
All right, man.
See you guys.
Can I get a check?
Nah. We straight.
Thanks, man.
This has been an actual anti-drug public service announcement. To combat this and other drug war hysteria, listen to the Marijuana Agenda every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific at live.mjagenda.com. New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
You're not high. You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm astonished to hear people suggest we can solve our heroin crisis. Have you heard this? By having more marijuana.
Okay, maybe you're a little high.
Hey everybody, it's Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
Activism begins with ACT. The Marijuana Agenda features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's Activist Agenda.
Welcome to another edition of the Activist Agenda. I'm Russ Belville, and joining me here at Delta 9 Studios, we have investigative journalist and friend of the show, Angela Baca, in studio. Hi, Angela.
Hey, Russ.
I'm so excited to have you here because you just produced what I think is one of the best investigative pieces on the mechanism of activism. You know, what it takes for grassroots groups and national groups and funders and all of the politics that go on at a local level. We'll talk about that. You've recently published a 4-part series in Huffington Post that took a look at this, and I encourage everyone to check that out. Do you have that linked on your website?
It's at the top of my Facebook page. All four will be linked right there. So facebook.com/AngelaBaca.
And that's Baca with two C's, B-A-C-C-A. Check that out. A very, very deep dive you took into what's going on in the state of Ohio. And we'll get to that. But I wanted to start off with the Joker to my Batman, Kevin Sabet, and the folks at Project Sam, because this is, while the piece is largely focusing on Ohio and what went down with its medical and its legalization plans, what went down in the legislature and so forth, in part four, you get to the meat on Project Sam that I've been searching for and digging for, and that is their connections and what's fueling Project Sam. And for our listeners that don't know, that's the Smart Approaches to Marijuana. It's the leading anti-legalization lobby out there. I call them Project Samuel, Smart Approaches to Marijuana Use Except Legalization. And Angela, let's just start there with Project Sam. Kevin Sabet's the head of this. We see him on TV all the time. What is it that you found out about their funding and what's got them going?
Right. Well, the people who've been going after Sabet, yourself and myself included, the minute he called himself the quarterback of the anti-legalization movement, yeah, we all targeted him. And it made us overlook his partner, who's Patrick Kennedy, the nephew of former President John F. Kennedy and the, yes, son of Ted Kennedy. And Kennedy's connections will really kind of spell out the bigger picture of what's going on with Project Sam. There has already been previous reporting showing that they have affiliations with the Community Anti-Drug Coalition and all of the organizations that receive those federal funding. They've also been working with pharmaceutical companies that provide opiate drugs.
Okay.
But it seems that
and the fixes for opiate drugs too.
Absolutely. One of the biggest ones would be Vivitrol, which is a once a month injection that costs $1,000 a month. They've been lobbying heavily to get it required in prisons, covered by Medicaid. It actually could kill you if you take it and use opiates. You can cause overdose and die. So it's actually a deadly drug, and it's a lifelong solution to the problem of opiate abuse.
So Kennedy is a former congressman, and some of the background on him, he comes to this as the recovered addict. He paints the picture of his addiction to painkillers that led in 2006 to wrecking, like, not once but twice in his car driving while high. In the second instance, in the Capitol, Washington, D.C., Capitol Police gave him a ride home, just a ride home.
Right. He was a huge embarrassment to the Kennedy family and their name. And I think that he really needed a way of turning that around and spinning it in the media as something that's propelled a more noble life's work. And mm-hmm. I think that's what's really driven what he's been doing in recent years with Project Sam as well.
So they're connected. Kennedy's connected with CADCA and the pharmaceutical companies how?
Kennedy has a 501c3 group called the Kennedy Forum, which is explicitly funded by opiate-producing pharmaceutical companies, companies that provide drugs that treat opiate epidemics, and the companies that distribute the drugs themselves. All of them are funding his life work of curing addiction through the Kennedy Forum by looking for pharmaceutical solutions to cure addiction.
So this is why this is part of the shell game that's going on here, because Sabet will obviously, oh, we're the little guy, we're fighting against big marijuana, the well-funded pot lobby, and we're just the citizens working so hard to stop addiction. And if you take a look at their finances, as you did, there's not much there, is there?
No, and that's intentional. You can look at their finances and see that on the C3, I think they had around 30,000 and around a couple hundred thousand in their C4 last year, which is pretty much nothing, but they are coordinating the messaging sponsored by the pharmaceutical companies that then goes to these community level groups that receive federal funding. So it's really all these loophole kind of ways of roundabout financing and discover and shaping policy.
Yeah, we found a slice of this here in Oregon in 2014 when we were trying to legalize, and I dug deep, got some open records request, and found Sabet was getting paid $3,000 an appearance plus expenses to go to 13, at that time, cities around Oregon for a education tour. This is being paid for by state and county anti-drug education efforts. But seemingly the education was all how bad it would be if we legalize, and only took place in 2012 and 2014 when we were trying to pass legalization, not the odd numbered years. So the shell game here is, sure, Sabet and Sam can show they don't have very much money coming in, but when all of their expenses and their honoraria are being paid by these anti-drug coalitions, being paid by our tax dollars, and now how do we link that in with the pharmaceuticals and Kennedy?
Well, it's interesting, too, and to kind of jump from Kennedy is to Sabet himself. Sabet was the trustee of the DEA Education Fund, which is a 501c3 that the DEA is using to push out messaging. I don't know why that's ethical or legal in any way that they have that, but he was someone who determines where that money goes from. Most of the money coming into the DEA Education Fund was coming from Bayer Pharmaceuticals and the chain drugstores of America, which represents Rite Aid, Walgreens, and all of the companies that dispense opiates.
Yeah, made opiates in the beginning. So we've got Sabet as a DEA trustee directing money to go to education efforts that then sometimes bring Sabet to a state to get paid?
Exactly.
Oh, my. All right. So you see how
it's all the same money, just through different little shells and networks, but it gets things where they need to go.
And so the larger picture you're saying here is where Kennedy fits in and what he's doing. He's got a lot of still allies in Congress that he works with and is pushing for a lot of these pro-opioid overdose laws. You'll get the Vivitrol out to the people and so forth, right?
Well, despite the fact that neither Sabet or Kennedy has any sort of medical training to speak of, Kennedy is now in charge of President Trump's opiate task force, and they're basically taking all of the failed policies that are killing people in Ohio and moving them to a national level. And it's really still in the name of profiting the companies that caused the opiate epidemic in the first place.
Yeah, these companies overprescribe, get the people hooked on the opiates. When they get hooked on the opiates, can't get them through their insurance or whatever anymore. They go to the streets and get, you know, God knows what that sometimes has fentanyl in it. They die, cause a big public outrage. Now, hey, we've got the solution. We've got these Vivitrols and anti-opioid drugs that we want to sell as well.
And opioid constipation drugs and all kinds of other side drugs for your opiates.
Oh, yes. The OIC, that terrible commercial on TV.
It was in the Super Bowl a couple years ago, yeah.
That's the one I'm thinking about. So what a nefarious scheme they've got here. So this ties into why you would find Project Sam and people like Kennedy being so against medical marijuana. And what we've been finding in study after study, one that I just reported on last week, once again confirming, people kick the, you know, it's 2/3 of the patients that kick their opiate pills if they've got regular access to medical cannabis. This is why you hear Sabet and Kennedy and their Project Sam pushing this idea that, marijuana is a medicine if we can extract the cannabinoids from it and put it in a pill or an inhaler. But my goodness, you can't grow it yourself and stop taking our pills.
Yeah, it's absolutely about the money. hands down. And as a patient myself, I had I have Crohn's disease, and I've had two surgeries to remove portions of my colon. The last time I did it, they shot me up with as much Dilaudid as I could possibly want. And you know what? It is really fun to do heroin in a medical setting like that. However, I rationally know that I can't continue doing that. And I do see how when you take a single compound drug like that, you can become very tolerant to it and need increased amounts to get off of it. Every single time I've come home from the hospital on those drugs, I've completely detoxed myself using a ton of marijuana every time to get off of it within a day or two.
Yeah.
And that means a lot to me, especially because with marijuana, I don't have to increase the amount that I use to get the same effect. I can just switch up a strain because it's genetically diverse. It's always a different blend of cannabinoids and terpenes in every different formulation.
Yeah, I'll attest to that. I remember coming out of a surgery that I had, and they had me hook up to the morphine thing with the button. You could push the button, but you'd only get the morphine once every 15 minutes. And within a half a day, I could sense 14 minutes and 55 seconds like anybody. And I was ready to push that button. And so when you bring that up, it brings to mind one of the things we hear our opponents say, people like Sabet and Kennedy, that lament that, you know, marijuana gets you high. We can't have people getting high. I'm like, have you tried an opiate?
I mean, I've always been fascinated by drugs, and as a patient, I've had the opportunity of doing lots of different drugs in a clean medical setting, and I do them experimentally when I'm in there. The pharmaceutical drugs are really hard and really harsh on your body and dangerous. I took one for nausea one time that actually burned my arm going into the vein. It was really painful to take when I could have just taken a hit off a vaporizer or a joint, it would have just gone away. So if we aren't allowed to start somewhere safer with marijuana, then we're more than likely to get hooked on a pill like an opiate, like fentanyl. So marijuana threatens that quite a bit.
Well, let's take this discussion now to a state that could really use more marijuana, and that is Ohio, where the focus of your four-part investigation was. And that this is a story that dates back even before the attempt to pass legalization in 2015, as Ohio has been a hotbed of activism for decades and has well-entrenched grassroots activist groups there. Give our listeners a little taste of what you found in Ohio and how this is, you know, how we've seen the forces of the Project Sam types, the legislature kind of scheming to make this the most pharmaceuticalized, one of the most pharmaceuticalized medical cannabis programs in the country.
Well, Ohio, despite being kind of smaller and in the Midwest, is a really important state when it comes to understanding the culture and demographics of the United States. It's the seventh largest state in America. It's almost equally rural and urban, but all of its demographics, down from race, gender, color, economics, almost completely perfectly mirror the United States at large. It also is a very important bellwether in our presidential elections. Yep. As goes Ohio, so goes the nation. Every single time Ohio picks a president, the nation goes with it. And so we have seen there that there's a lot of money coming in and out every 4 years for the presidential elections. There's a lot of big money and big players there all the time because it's such an influential place. And while activists who are dealing with medical problems usually have pushed to get themselves safe access, the money has been building outside of Ohio, and it's really complicated the process on the ground there.
So we date back to groups that you reported on, Ohio Rights Group. We have there's such a cavalcade of acronyms that came through here of all these different grassroots groups. And you mentioned, as Ohio goes, so goes the nation. I've had the opportunity to report on elections for marijuana statewide since 2010. Each one that's gone down, I've traveled to a different state, met the activists there. And as I'm reading your piece on Ohio, I'm like, yeah, saw that in California. Oh, yeah, saw that in Washington. Oh, that sounds like Colorado. Let's explore that angle a little bit and what you found as far as the grassroots eating their own, I guess, you know, the circular firing squad.
There's a group of people who've been involved in marijuana legalization since before it was popular, before there were headlines, and they all tend to kind of know each other across state lines. I worked for one of them, Ed Rosenthal.
Yeah.
And so before everything started getting as big as it was, we had a very tight-knit network. And I feel like those groups definitely had a lot of ownership to the culture and the cause. Mm-hmm. And as more and more people have come in, there's been an identity crisis for sure, and a lot of money flooding in and changing people's loyalties and where they actually stand. And now we find that nobody can agree on any form of legalization.
Yeah, and this was brought to a head in 2015 with the Responsible Ohio campaign, which did as much everything wrong you could possibly do wrong from the perspective now that we have of legalizing in 8 states, and culminating most egregiously in Buddy the Mascot, which, you know, you got a male bud, which is oxymoron.
You know, Ian James really tried to convince me that that is a gender neutral bud because of the way his name is spelled. But if you look at the body, it's clearly male. There's no top. There's nothing to cover the top half, know?
Buddy had some pretty nice pecs.
Yeah, Buddy looks like a man with a head of a booger.
Yeah. There you go. So that was 2015, the issue 3, which the big contentious part of the issue 3 was it wrote in an oligopoly to control marijuana growing, cannabis growing. The 20 wealthy investors who contributed $2 million each, I think, was that it?
It started out as 10 investors. Okay. It turned into 10 investment groups because they started filing with the SEC and trading out grow units before they even made the ballot.
Yeah, yeah. So, but the thing that turned off the majority of the activism community, and I'm sure the grassroots activists in Ohio, because I got to meet a lot of them too, was writing in this, kind of buying the regulatory capture on the cannabis production side. It went down in flames. Yeah, like a 2-1 vote against it. And I was there in...
Wait, and I loved your commentary on that, actually.
Thank you. I was there in 2015 when it went down. And then what unfolded was kind of the vacuum, what got filled in that vacuum from, well, it went down in flames, but not because legalization was unpopular, but because of this type of legalization was unpopular. And oh my God, look at these numbers for medical. Take us from that point.
Well, right. You have to remember exactly where we're at this time. The Responsible Ohio election was November 2015. So in the vacuum of that, we are already in the throes of a presidential campaign. And so everybody knew that if there was something on the ballot in Ohio in 2016, it could likely bring out voters for Hillary Clinton because the Democrats were already sure Hillary Clinton was going to be the nominee at that point. So they wanted to do what they could to keep Hillary off the to keep medical marijuana off the ballot to prevent a Democrat win because Kasich was running for president.
Hmm. And as goes Ohio, so goes the nation.
Exactly.
Right. So this is a case of and we're seeing, past as prologue in Oklahoma right now. 2018, Governor Mary Fallon's talking about keeping their medical, which is already they're already going to vote on medical in Oklahoma, but not on the they don't want it on the general election ballot. They're trying to move it to the primary where it wouldn't damage Republican prospects in any way.
Right. But the thing about that to remember, and I think is interesting, is that this isn't explicitly a Democrat issue at all.
Yes.
Anymore. If you look at Trump supporters, the vast majority of them support marijuana legalization, even. I know, because they trolled me hard after the election.
Yeah, there we go. So we had the 2015 issue 3 go down, but it had huge numbers for its medical marijuana support in Ohio. This is where the grassroots wants to put together, at this point, a rights-based medical cannabis type of...
That was always kind of the roots of the grassroots campaigns, was rights-based. They could put something in their amendment in Ohio that would say that everybody has the right to use, possess, and grow at their home. The state itself can regulate commercial in whichever way it sees fit, but this is a human right, and mm-hmm. you can't do anything to impede that. Those were easily dashed. That was why Responsible Ohio came in, because they saw that coming into the ballot itself and really being a game changer. And they didn't want to see that happen state to state. If you look at what's happening in Midwestern and East Coast states, they're almost always oligopoly licensing now, which mm-hmm. is monopoly-like, but with a few players.
Yeah, and so this is where, then, to step into the void, Marijuana Policy Project is, look, we can put together medical marijuana in 2016. Now you got Ohio politicians not wanting a vote there in 2016. And then the legislature steps in, and this is where it gets... just nefarious.
What happened with MPP is quite bizarre, and they stopped answering a lot of my questions when I was asking about it. I specifically was looking for their 990s or federal tax returns for their C3 and their C4 in 2016, because they were routing all of the money from the Ohio campaign into their national account and then paying it back into the Ohio campaign, so you couldn't see who the real large donors were. I really wish they would release that, because it would give a lot of clarity to what happened in Ohio last year.
Mm, very interesting. And this is where politically the Ohio legislature, this is kind of a strong arm that we tried to use in Oregon, actually, which is, well, hey, look, you know, you can work with us to put together some sort of legalization or medical that you like, or the voters can pass it And so the MPP was used as a threat because, hey, we can put this thing on the ballot. It'll bring out the more progressive turnout. And the Ohio legislature says, well, we better beat them to the punch.
Well, it certainly looks that way.
Yeah, beat them to the punch and put our own type of medical. And once they pass that medical through the legislature, now MPP feels like, well, it's got the legs cut out from going for any sort of initiative, and they bail.
Right, and they took one of their most controversial activists from Ohio and put them up into Michigan now, and some of the trolling on the internet that was happening surrounding that activist is now happening in Michigan as well.
My goodness, it's just a huge, huge story. I encourage everyone to check out Huffington Post. It's a four-part series written by Angela Baca. Your Facebook, Angela Baca, B-A-C-C-A. People will be able to find it, and you can get all of these. It's a lot easier to follow in print, actually.
Set aside a couple hours if you're going to read it in full.
Exactly. Angela, thank you so much for coming into the studio and talking about all this.
Thanks.
This episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. MJAgenda.com.
The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville is brought to you by Cannabis Kamikaze, a professional licensed producer from Canada producing 3 pounds per light. Follow Cannabis Kamikaze on Twitter at Cannabis Kamikaze. That's at Cannabis, K-A-M-I-K-A-Z. Cannabis Kamikaze.
The Marijuana Agenda. Kevin Sabet's boogeyman since 2012.
You have offended my family, and you have offended Shaolin Temple.
Yes, might have gotten away with it too, if it wasn't for these blasted kids and their dogs.
Despite what you may have heard, CBD is not, quote, legal in all 50 states, end quote. The DEA is quite clear that cannabidiol is a Schedule 1 controlled substance banned in all 50 states. Think about it. Why would 17 states pass laws legalizing CBD, and why would there be 3 bills in Congress to legalize CBD federally if CBD were already legal in all 50 states?
Health Cannabinoid, your ACMPR experts. Consultation services for medical cannabis. Visit healthcannabinoid.com or call 1-800-906-1383. That's www.healthcannabinoid.com or call 1-800-906-1383. Health Cannabinoid.
Total war against public enemy public number one.
10 federal criminal penalties for up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
Marijuana is probably the most dangerous drug.
Legalization is just another word for surrender.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
This is not medicine. This is a Cheech and Chong show.
Encourage people to use less drugs.
I am ill.
That was the point.
I think we'd be a mistake to leave a state.
Negative reports coming out of Colorado.
Don't smoke marijuana.
Angela Baca has produced an amazing piece out at Huffington Post. I encourage you to check it out on her Facebook page, Angela Baca, B-A-C-C-A, because within it, she exposes the shell game going on with Kevin Sabet and Project Sam. And one of the things that's been constant in my tracking and trolling of Kevin Sabet is how much outrage he feigns whenever someone tries to tie him to the pharmaceutical industry. We take no money from the prescription drug, and we take no money from the pharmaceutical industry. He'll get really heated about it. He'll block you over it, right? Really upset about it. And what Angela found in her reporting is that indeed, if you look at, you know, Project Sam, just it's that organization, it's 501c3 and it's, you know, Form 990 IRS taxes. You won't find much, very little money donated by just, you know, like he'll say, you know, anti-drug groups and concerned citizens and such. But the game going on here is that Sam doesn't have to be taking in any money because it's just a front. It's just a masthead, a nameplate, if you will, for it being a talking point machine. All that Sam has to do is to create these anti-legalization talking points. They don't have to fund them. They just have to create them because they know once they create it, it's then taken by the anti-drug coalition of Multnomah County or the rogue area task force or the interagency drug busting unit, whatever the hell they call it in your area. Those groups can just take that information and then using taxpayer money, using the money they've been granted to combat drugs, they can then fund the propagation of this propaganda. Sam doesn't have to have the money to buy a billboard or to push a talking point. They just have to create it. It's the local anti-drug groups using your taxpayer dollars that then push that message. And no clearer example do we have than this study that we've got, this story we've got, excuse me, from Earl Blumenauer. Now, we reported on this. We were there at the Quarterly Cannabis Caucus when Blumenauer was talking about forming his political action committee to go after Pete Sessions for blocking marijuana votes. And the quote that we got from Kevin Sabet on this, when he was asked by the reporter for the Salem Statesman Journal, almost perfectly was echoed by Representative Sessions himself. And I can tell you, a guy like Pete Sessions in Texas, he is not anti-marijuana because he's done a lot of research and he's looked deeply into it and he's formed a cogent opinion on the issue, pro or con. Marijuana is probably way low on his list of priorities, right? He wants to, you know, build the wall, you know, Mexican immigrants, tax cuts, terrorists, whatever else is on his agenda. Marijuana is probably not high up on the list. And that's why it's so easy for a Sabet and a Project Sam to just hand to their staffers certain talking points. And then that becomes what that congressman will echo. So again, Sabet and Sam don't have to push them, have to have the money to push the message. They can just get the message to the people who are already in power and can use our taxpayer dollars to get the message out for them. So let me give you the quote here, because it's just really amazing. I want to get the full quote, and I couldn't do this for the news segment. But let's see, where is this? Okay, so Kevin Sabet, here's the Sabet quote. This is a statement. The marijuana industry, egged on by a politician from Portland, Oregon, who is bankrolled by the pot lobby, has decided to target Congressman Sessions for championing his constituents' health and safety. The pot lobby can't stand having someone standing up to their addiction for profit tactics, but his constituents know better, and our billboard reflects their gratitude. End quote. Okay, so that's Sabet. That's the talking point. Pot lobby, big marijuana, corrupted congressman, addiction for profit. What did we hear from Representative Sessions himself? He told the Statesman Journal in a statement, quote, "The merchants of addiction are attempting to influence our work, and it's my hope that we will see this problem as a national crisis." The merchants of addiction. Here we go. This is all straight from the Project Sam mouth. And to make this an even bigger example of a puppet show, we know that Project Sam is co-founded by Patrick Kennedy, and Kennedy is tied in through the Kennedy Forum to massive amounts of money coming in from the Community Anti-Drug Coalition, from the chain drug stores organization, right? Chain drug stores, CVS, Walgreens, Rite Aid, those kind of drug stores want to make sure that their pills can still be sold on a regular basis. See, when you realize that we are not fighting a war on drugs, this is not a war on drugs. We are not fighting for a drug-free society, no matter what they tell you. This is a war between drugs. This is a war between the corporate-controlled drugs that make white people who own corporate stock rich versus the drugs nature provides to us that have mostly been developed by indigenous peoples And anyone with just the tiniest bit of effort can produce for themselves and cut the middleman out of the equation altogether. That's what this is about. And when you start to understand that, the nation's drug policies and prohibition makes perfect sense. When you try to look at this and like, well, marijuana's not dangerous, it's a helpful plant, why are we banning it? We can make so much economic opportunity. It's lunacy. But when you start to understand that this is to protect the portfolios of rich white people who've invested heavily in this medical healthcare paradigm for profit, it begins to make a lot more sense.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
For everyone here at Delta 9 House and Studios, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
You're seeing, you're planning, you're growing, you're trying, you're rolling, you're smoking. Until you see, you're planning, you're growing, you're trying, you're rolling, you're smoking, and it goes down super.